Ladies and gentlemen, would you now please welcome Crix Finney and Kenneth Louie.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Crix Finney. I am a product manager on the AdMob team at Google, and I'm here with my colleague, Kenneth.
Hi, everybody. My name is Kenneth Louie. I lead content recruitment for Android in the Google Play Store. My job is to make sure that there are great apps and games in the store for users, and also to make sure that, help you guys be successful by using the store.
And my job is to make the ads on AdMob better. We're here to talk to you today about monetizing your Android apps. We're going to cover a bunch of different monetization options for you and try and actually present a framework for how to think about monetizing your apps. So let's get right into it. I think that there really are three things that any app developer or really any software business needs to think about when you're trying to grow a business from the thing that you've built. This has actually gone around on the internet a few times recently, and it's a pretty good framework. Number one is user engagement. It's really the key thing. This is, seems obvious, but it's it, right? Like, if you don't build an app that is useful and valuable to people and that they keep coming back to, you got nothing. So that's really the key thing for building a business later on. Number two is distribution, right? Obviously, you need to make sure that the right people around the world know about your app, find your app, and can get their hands on your app. And then only at the end of the day, the third pillar is to think about monetization, how you're going to make money from this app that you've built. So if you're working on a mobile app or any software startup, this is even maybe how I would organize my team, right? Any activity that you do should fall into one of these three categories. And really, when you are trying to think about monetization, which is what we're talking about today, it doesn't work unless you have strength in the other two categories as well. So at Google I.O., we actually have three sessions that cover these different categories. We're talking right now about monetization. Following immediately in this room at 4, our colleagues Patrick and Kushagra are going to be talking about promoting your app, how to find new users and distribute your app. And then on Friday, our colleagues Neil and Nick at 11:30 are going to talk about how you can measure and understand your user engagement using Google Analytics, which is a fantastic tool for doing that. And we also have a code lab tomorrow to get in depth with a lot of these things and learn with our developer team and our engineers about how to do a lot of these things we're going to be talking about today. That's tomorrow at 11:45. So cool. Let's talk a little bit about monetization. We're still at the beginning of this evolution of the mobile ecosystem. I think most of you probably know this. We saw a very similar thing happen with the web 10 years ago. Today, there's just an incredible number of devices out there. I think the stat came out in March that there are actually more people, at least in the US, buying smartphones and tablets than buying laptop and desktop computers today, which is just crazy. It's hard to understate the impact that this is going to have on computing and on society. So what about apps? A few years ago, you had a great idea for an app. It was pretty simple. You'd put your app up, and maybe you charge 99 cents for it, or you throw some ads on it and kind of hope for the best. But things have gotten a lot more complicated. There are many, many different ways to monetize your app out there. You can sell it. You can sell stuff within the app. You can do virtual goods. You can do subscriptions. You can do advertising. So one of the things that we get asked a lot is, what monetization method should I use? So we've thought about this, and we want to try and show you guys a nice little framework for thinking about this. So here's the framework. It's not all that simple. This flowchart is not meant to be a playbook, but it's just an illustration of how complex the world is out there. And really, the point we're trying to make is that there's no one path to monetizing your app. Different people use apps in very different ways. Anybody that's looked closely at a piece of software knows that people use it for all sorts of different things. Like, users are diverse. And so it's really up to you guys to understand your users and understand, therefore, which are the best ways to monetize depending on what your users are doing. And if there's one thing we really want to take away from this session, it is just that there's no one single path to maximizing the value you get from your app. But it's really about understanding your users and understanding the best ways to do that given what they're doing. So let's take an example. So let's say you have a group of users that are, you know, excited about your app, and you know, maybe they are, I don't know, pick a demographic, 35 to 45-year-old females in the Midwest or something, and they want to actually pay for the stuff in your app. Maybe you're producing a game that has virtual goods that they are, you know, kind of want to pay for in an ongoing way. Great. That means you can actually do that. You should just do that. That's a pretty direct way of monetizing your app. But in other examples, looking somewhere else on the flowchart, you may have another group of users who are not actually willing to pay anything. Maybe they're just sort of browsing through through your app. Maybe it's an RSS reader or something. And in that case, you should think about a different business model, in this case, advertising. So at Google, we have sort of two major venues in which you can monetize your app. One is the Google Play Store, which Kenneth is going to cover in depth in a minute. And the other, of course, is indirect monetization through advertising. So let's turn it over to Kenneth, and he's going to talk about all the different ways you can monetize using Google Play.
Thank you, Crix. So in this section of the presentation, we're going to mainly talk about three things. The first one is about expanding the opportunities for monetizing applications in the Google Play Store. The second one is to really describe the different options that you have and give you a high-level overview of how to use them. And then finally, we're going to dive into a couple of case studies of successful developers. Some of the developers have been really successful in climbing some of our top charts, top pay, top free. But more importantly, since this is a monetization talk, the top grossing categories. And so we'll take a look at those and see what are they doing right that we can learn from. So you've all heard from Hugo this morning, and then just now, Chris, about the tremendous momentum of the Android ecosystem. So building any type of a business really requires you to have a customer base. And so the customer base for Android is really growing very rapidly. You might have seen me just looking at this clock in front of me. You don't see it, but I'm seeing this second counting down for the time remaining for the section, and that number from Hugo, 12 devices a second, keeps ticking every time I see that clock runs. So in about the 10 minutes that we started this talk, there's about 7,000 new customers that could potentially be consuming your services. So the ecosystem is working really, really well. Isn't that just amazing? But having users alone is really not enough. What we need to make sure is that they really have the necessary instruments to pay for your services. And in other words, that means providing different options of forms of payment, or what we call FOPs, set up that they can actually very easily pay for their service, pay for your services within the Google Play Store. And also, these different forms of payments need to suit different user needs as well. So in the Google Play Store, we've always given users the option to charge by credit card or by debit card. But of course, not everybody has a credit card. Many different demographics or different locations of users, you know, they don't actually have access to a credit card. So we have added direct carry billing, and since last year at Google I.O., we've added 5 new countries and 10 new carriers to direct carry billing. And as you've heard from Chris's talk just earlier, direct carry billing really has a very, very major impact on revenues and sales. And I'm really glad to report that nearly 40% of Google Play users are actually able to charge their purchases directly to their mobile bill. So this is huge. What's new is Google Play Balance. So Google Play Balance introduces a new form of payment via stored value. You're going to be getting your new devices soon, so with these new devices in hand, all of you will get a $25 credit automatically added to your Google Wallet account to spend on Google Play content. So as we were talking about earlier, not every user has access to credit card. Not every user or device have access to direct carry billing. For example, if you have a Wi-Fi-only device, you wouldn't have direct carrier billing. So as you can imagine, there are many new opportunities that can be opened up with stored value. This is still very much in the early stage, and we're actively working in this area, so please stay tuned for more news coming up in the near future. Now, in addition to more users and setting up more forms of payment, we really need to make sure that it's easier for users to consume your services and also provide you as a business more flexibility to charge for your services. So not so long ago, deciding on a business model in the app space was actually relatively straightforward. You build an application, and then when you're done, you kind of decide, hey, do I want to launch it as a free application, and maybe I have some advertising in it, or should I have it as a paid application? And that's the choices you have when you go to the publisher, you know, console, is to pick free or paid. It's a very simple model, but at the same time, it also has the limitations because it also didn't have some of the capabilities needed for today's business environment. We now have many more options in Google Play to cater to those needs, but that also means, very importantly, with those options, those added options, you really need to start thinking about your monetization strategy, not after development, but when you design the application and as you're developing your application. You really kind of have to think of it as a business of what your application is going to do, what your game is going to do, and build in the monetization method within it. So without further ado, let's take a look at what those options are, and we'll dive into a few examples. So let's start with free. Free provides, as we all know, users like free. It gives you the lowest barrier to entry for users to at least try out your application. In terms of monetization, free typically means ad-driven, right? You actually have your app downloaded as free, but you could be earning indirect revenue through advertising throughout the lifetime of the application. There could be many reasons why you decide to go this way, to be ad-driven. It could be because paid apps are not supported, or it could be in certain countries, or if your content is simply more suitable for free, that's what you would decide to do. Crix is going to go into this area in depth in the latter part of this presentation. In premium, this is where the user pays per title. So in Google Play, this is a one-time charge. What that means is it's a one-time charge that associates your user account with the title that you purchased. That means that if you paid for an application, even though you may change your device, or you may upgrade your system software, or later, let's say, if you add a tablet or add a new device and you log on with the same account, if you paid for that premium title, you will have access to it, and you only need to pay for it once, and you will also get all subsequent updates to the application as well without having to pay again. Obviously, for updates, you can also launch version 2, version 3 as a separate title that you can charge again. But that has its ramifications by itself, which is you're kind of splitting your install base. But that's a different topic. So that's free and premium. And then finally, there's trial, where you typically have a light version, sometimes limited by functionality, or maybe it's time-bound, whereby the user can upgrade to a full version if they like what they see in the free version. This model is particularly popular in premium games. We see a lot of premium games that have a light version and a full version. And in fact, just an anecdotal kind of example, when we feature something in the Google Play Store, if we feature a paid title or a premium title, we very often see a big jump not just in that title, but also in the free version of that title as well. So users always look at these things. They're going to paid. Sometimes they'll go to the free, and then if they like what they see, then they come back to pay for the full version. Next, let's talk about freemium. So freemium is a very popular topic today, and I'm sure a lot of you are hearing about it because of this current success that it's getting. Freemium is largely possible because of in-app billing capabilities. The user downloads a game or app for free, And further down the line in the application, you have different in-app products that are offered to the users, such as virtual currency, special items, or digital content that you purchase within the app itself. This is a great model because it allows your users to download it without having to pay for it, invest some time in learning how the game works or what the app does, and then further, you know, have further offerings for them to purchase. And obviously, some apps are better suited for freemium, and we've seen a lot of successes in social casual games. Some other applications may not suit this form of payment very well, or this type of payment very well, which is, for example, like productivity or business. For example, imagine if you have a spreadsheet and if you charge 50 cents every time somebody wants to print something or format a paragraph, that's not so cool. So some category of applications work, some don't in the freemium case. So let's take a look at how in-app billing works. Let's give you just kind of a quick run through of an example. This is actually based on the sample code, which is available on developer.android.com. We'll do a quick run through. So first, Google Play client application, which is on the device, it plays a very central role in letting your application work with the Google Play server. So your application actually never really has to talk to the server except through this Google Play client. We have something which is called market billing service within the client. And this is when you actually set up in-app purchases, you set up your product catalog through the publisher console, and you can set different currencies and so forth by publishing them through the Google Play publisher console. And your application would reference, right, as you build your application will be exposing those products available for purchase within the application. And you can build your application logic around it. Now, typically, this is how an application would be set up. And again, this is structured after the sample code that we have on developer.android.com. But typically, you would have a billing service set up. The billing service makes requests, send billing requests to the market billing service. You have a billing receiver, which receives asynchronous messages back from the server. You also have maybe a couple classes there to respond to these to respond to the messages that you receive through the response handler, and then you may have a purchase off server, so that when you confirm that something has been transacted, you reflect it in the UI. And you may also have a security module within the client itself to handle various different security aspects. And then optionally, you can also set up your own server to store your transaction status. It's not something that's required, but it's something that's probably good to have. In the cases where you deliver digital content, for example, it's good to have your own server and also maybe do tracking of transactions and also security validations separately from the application, which is probably, from a best practice perspective, better than actually storing that security mechanism in the client. And lastly, there are two types of in-app purchases, one which is managed, another which is unmanaged. So managed is very similar to when you buy an application where the Google Play Store will actually keep track of those services, of those items that have been purchased. Unmanaged is something which the Google Play Store will help you with the transaction flow, but let you manage after that in terms of, you know, who has rights to what and so forth. So let's take a quick look at how a request is made for a purchase. Before this actually happens, you actually make a call to the Google Play. Again, this is still on the client. You make a call to the Google Play client to see what type of billing is supported and what version. After you do that, after you check that you actually does that the client actually does support in-app billing, then you send a billing request with something called a request purchase, and you get back a bundle with response code, a purchase intent, and a request ID. What the purchase intent is remember when we were talking about earlier that your application provides the application interface, but the Google Play Store client actually provides the transaction interface. Okay, so this is where the purchase intent comes into play. Next, you get that intent. You're at the application. The user now wants to purchase, let's say, a sword. And now you start the intent. It goes into the Google Play interface. And here's a quick code snippet of how this would work. The first section is setting up that request purchase. You put in a product ID, and you also put in a product type. Product type would be either it's an in-app or a subscription. We'll talk about subscription in a little bit. Once you set up the request bundle, then you basically send it to mService. mService is the market billing service. You trigger send billing request, you send over that request, and you get back a pending intent, the intent where you launched the Google Play UI. Okay, and then finally, your application can pop that up, the screen, for purchasing. And when the transaction is completed, it could mean it actually went through or the user somehow canceled, you get a broadcast intent. So the broadcast intent is called in-app notify. Once you get that, you as an application can now send another billing request to get the purchase information. Right? So the server tells you, Google Play tells you, hey, the transaction is done, now go get that purchase information. And you get another broadcast intent, which is called purchase state change, and with it you get a JSON string, which contains things like the order ID, the product ID, purchase time, and we'll talk about purchase token later on when we're in subscription, but basically you get the information back from Google Play Store about that transaction. Now you also have to, once you get that, is to confirm those notifications. If you don't confirm, the Google Play client, Google Play server will continue to send you these notifications, these broadcast intents, the in-app notify. So once you've processed the transaction and you say, let's say you made it available to the user, you want to make sure that you respond to that notification so that the server knows that transaction has been completed. All right. So that's kind of how the flow works. And let's switch gears a little bit. And we're going to talk about a case study, now that you know roughly how it works. We're going to talk about a game called Tiny Village, which is by a company called Tiny Co. This is an interesting case study because this game was launched back in a few months ago, back in December. It's a free-to-play game with in-app purchases. It's gotten 4.5 stars from users, so it's pretty popular. Users are pretty happy about it. It's gotten more than 3 million downloads. But in that short period of time, I think what's really interesting is that Tiny Village is now number 8 overall in top grossing in those few short months. In the casual game category, it's number 1 in top grossing and number 9 in top 3. And you've also heard earlier that they have experienced really good ARPU per paying user as well. So the game goes like this, just a quick overview of what the game does so we can go through the other examples, is that you're building a village, and you have different types of currencies. You can raise dinosaurs, you can build your stores, you can build houses, you can ask your employees or the villagers to go work. They will pay you taxes, they will give you currencies, you have special items that you can collect. You see the android there, the android statue there. But the point of the game is you can actually run through this gameplay, with the option to either pay or not pay. If you look at the top, we have some coins there. The coins are where you collect from taxes or, from the dinosaurs. And you can use them to build new things. And the crystals on the left, those blue crystals, a lot of times are used to accelerate the gameplay. So, rather than spending 2,000 coins, you can spend 50 crystals, and those 50 crystals are something that you can purchase in packs. So that's the basic premise of the game. So why is it successful, we asked. So some of the strategy that we talked about and that they focused on were how you engage users, right? So we'll take a look at how Tiny Co. has managed to engage users throughout the 50 levels of this game. How do you convert users to paying users, right? How do you get over the free users and get them to actually pay for in-app items? And once they start paying, how do you monetize them more? And then finally, how do we manage user retention so the users are interested to continue to come back? So here's a chart regarding engagement. A lot of times, engagement is measured by active users. So on the y-axis, this is where you see DAUs, which is daily active users. And it's very typical to see a game where the daily active users, as the game progresses, on the x-axis, this is where the levels of the game, where the 50 levels are. As the level progresses, you have less daily active users. Now, what was interesting was that you see this hump between levels 28 and 34. What they found out was, you know, as this trend goes down, if you actually target those users with specific exclusive features, you can really affect the engagement of those users very, very effectively. Right? As you can see, the trend is going down, but they actually did something that with these exclusive features to bump up the daily active users. So there are a lot of things that you can do, and we'll look into some of those. Now, regarding pricing in terms to convert users, what they also did was look at various different items that has a low price version, a mid price version, and a high price version of the same items with different with differences in those items. And if you look at the folks, the users who bought those versions, for the low price versions, there were more new users, newly converted users. They're more attracted to the low price items versus the existing users. And then so forth, as you see a pretty good progression where when you go to the high price version, more of the existing users buy it versus the newly, you know, converted users. So as a continuation of that, what they discovered is higher level users, higher level players, really spend on items that have higher returns. So for example, you may be buying, you know, 99-cent crystals in the beginning. And you're like, oh, I'm going to try this out. But as you mature to later levels of the game, you know, you start to see people buying larger amounts, maybe with a discount, maybe with larger returns. They also ran a limited mini game with premium features, which resulted in much higher returns and happier players. And here are some of the stats. So when they ran this campaign with this mini game, number of paying customers went up, you know, 40%. Average user spend went over by about 30%. And most importantly, the revenues almost doubled. So here are some of the things that you can actually do to affect, you know, picking wisely about knowing who your players are, your consumers are, and targeting them appropriately. So about user intention, retention, some of the things that are really important is launching content frequently. In this particular type of game is to be able to attract the users so that, you know, they get distracted, that they're attracted to come back and see what's new. So as you can see here, there are things like, hey, you know, you've been playing with the game for a while, how about building a village road trip? And then after a while, once you start building their village road trip, how about building a statue? So that your tourists are actually going to see and come and see this golden statue. So very many interesting things that you can launch frequently to kind of track where the user is and ask them to, you know, attract them to come back. Secondly, it's about timely and relevant incentives. So actually, I was playing this game myself, and as I was running out of room on my village, the next time I launched a game, it told me, hey, you know, there's an expansion sale. 40% off, because I was actually running out of room. Now, if that happened when I just started the game, when I had acres of land, or when I have lots of land, that wouldn't have, you know, that wouldn't make sense at all. So timing it with the relevant content is very important. And then finally, expanding beyond the game itself, having social engagement. As you can see here, introducing Betsy so that it introduces you to the TinyCo community, where you actually invite and go see other people's villages. But not just building a network, but actually building that into the gameplay. So on the right there is Hotel Prehistoria. Not only are you able to look at other people's villages, but you can also put them into your own hotel as well. And that also includes things like notifications, right? So if it notices that you haven't been engaged with the game for a while, it will gently nudge you through notifications to tell you, hey, here are some incentives to come back into the game. But I think the key point to all of this is really important, which is not just blindly put these incentives out or launch, you know, or content updates, but it's really to iterate very quickly. Launch these campaigns, find out if they are successful, iterate it, and if something is successful, continue and run it. But if it's not, then do something else. This is something that they've done really well, which is continuous iteration and really tracking the metrics to see if any of these work well. And what's also interesting was that as we were conversing about, you know, why this game is so popular, was really about optimizing the user experience. There are many different types of devices out there in the Android ecosystem. There are low power devices, high power devices, there are large screens, small screens. What's really important and what's really interesting is that you need to cater to each and all of those users and not just have one single game. So TinyCo has actually built a game engine which is called the Griffin Engine. And the Griffin Engine allows you to optimize the UI for different screen sizes, different devices, and different aspect ratios. So if the screen is wider, it works just as well. Smaller or have higher density, it works just as well. Also, looking at the power of the device, adapt to different frame rates. So there are a lot of animations that goes on in this game. So depending on the power of the device, make sure that it's not laggy on any of those. So catering to the specific users. And also provide native performance as well. So this is a really good example, and I would encourage you to go talk to TinyCo. They're actually going to be at the Sandbox. Andrew is here, so I don't know if he's here, but just a quick shout out to actually share a lot of this information. So feel free to jump up and ask some questions. Next, let's talk about the paymium model and the trial paymium model. Paymium model is really just paper title. It's a combination of premium plus in-app purchase. So you actually have a title that sells and then have additional items that you sell afterwards within the game or within the app. And trial paymium is a variation of that, which is it's free initially. You pay to get the premium, upgrade to paymium, and then you have additional items after that. So there are not actually many examples, but here's actually a very good one, which is Draw Something, I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with, by Zynga. So Draw Something, there are two versions. The free version has in-app purchase items, which is ad-driven. There's also a paid version, $2.99 normally, with an in-app item, and that version removes the ads within the application. The reason why we picked Draw Something is, again, it's a very, very successful title. It's number one top paid overall and number seven top grossing overall in the store. In the brain and puzzle, it's number one top paid, number five top free, and it also occupies the number one and number three in top grossing, with the paymium version doing a little bit better on the number one slot there. So here's an example, and again, this is probably more rare than the common case, is that they actually have two separate APKs, two separate titles published in the store, and so their title is exposed in two different lists. And because of the popularity of the game, they actually are in two lists, both the top paid and the top free. And having two APKs actually allows you to do something interesting with an opportunity to upgrade your free users to your paid users. So if you look at some of these install charts, this was a flash sale which was run recently, just a couple of weeks ago. And what happened was on the left is a free version, on the right is a paid version. When they did a flash sale on the paid version, they actually asked the free, let the free users know that there's a flash sale and see what happened to the paid version. So there are some advantages to actually having multiple items of your game, both as a paymium model and as a freemium model. Okay, so next let's talk about, jump into subscription, which we launched at the end of May. So what subscription is, it's really an extension of in-app billing. It's an automatic recurring monthly or yearly method of payment. It continues until it's canceled. And everything is managed within the Google Play Store. The user can go in with a normal interface. Now you see a subscription tab there. And you can actually see, you can uninstall the application where you get a notification, or you can unsubscribe and cancel your subscription. So as an extension to what we saw earlier, to the in-app billing, we introduced a term which is introduced, I think, called purchase token, which associates a subscription ID with a user ID. and the subscription continues to renew itself until a new purchase state is changed. And that could be a user pressing, going into unsubscribing or canceling. And these could be delivered and communicated via in-app notifications and also via a server API, so you can keep track of those subscriptions yourself via your own server as well. Okay, so we talked about a lot of these options, and you're probably wondering, which one should you choose? There are so many of these. Now, I'm going to show you a quick slide before we wrap up here. Is if we look at the top grossing lists in the Play Store. I took a snapshot a few days ago. And you see, out of the top 20 grossing, 20 of those top grossing in casual games, they were all freemium. And on the left side, business applications, none of them. They're all premium titles. So yes, we focus a lot on freemium and paymium titles, but if you look at these types of applications, the ones that are successful by looking at the top grossing lists, you can see that it depends on which application, right? This is how consumers are responding to different business models. Is that, yes, there are things like casual games, cards and casinos, social, which is more focusing on the freemium, but you actually get a lot that are in the premium cycle as well. So it really depends on what your application is. So some key takeaways. Number one, find the model and the pricing that suits you. Go take a look at some of these titles that are successful, what their price range is to be competitive, and what your offering is. Number two, find the best ways to engage your users through frequent updates and promotions, timely incentives. Launch relevant targeted content. Convert those users to paying customers. And test often. I can't stress enough, test often, gauge success, iterate, and repeat. And optimize your user experience across devices. Integrate with social and do cross-promotions. And really, most importantly, as a part of this talk, is to build a monetization strategy into your app development efforts. All right, so with that, I'm going to pass it back to Crix to talk about advertising.
Cool, thanks, Kenneth. Yeah, thank you. There's a lot here, right? I don't know if I could even parrot back all those eight different things Kenneth just asked me to do, and that just sort of, I think, highlights the need for, you know, any individual app developer to have a deep understanding of what their users are doing, what the right model is for them. And advertising is many different things, so we're going to talk about that. I thought it might be useful to actually just talk for a little bit about where the ad dollars come from. It's not just sort of a magic money box. So let's go back a little bit and talk about how advertising was born. I really like to watch Mad Men. I don't know if you guys do, but it's a show on AMC, and it's about advertising, right? Advertising came about when mass media came about, really. The first mass media was the newspaper. And what happened is that businesses who had things to sell and wanted to reach customers and distribute their product realized that there were people reading newspapers all around the country and around the world, and that they could actually find new customers by promoting those businesses, right? So this is how advertising was born. You know, the old joke is that newspapers aren't actually selling news to their readers, but they're just selling the readers to the advertisers, in a sense. But of course, over time, as new forms of mass media have developed, advertising has gone with that. So in the last 50 years, we've seen television, the internet, and now mobile. On Mad Men, the protagonist is this guy named Don Draper, who's this sort of cool cat who creates ads. He creates these compelling and engaging ads which compel people to go buy a Kodak slide projector or go smoke Lucky Strike cigarettes. And I think that if Don Draper were alive today, he would be building mobile ads. This is really just the beginning. Advertisers are only starting to create cool experiences. You may have seen some really cool ad experiences on tablets that I see you all using today and stuff like that. But mobile really is the future of advertising. It's almost a platitude at this point. But advertisers and agencies around the world are thinking about how they can be the Don Draper of today and reach these audiences to build compelling ad experiences, and that's then what really drives value. I think one thing that I might suggest as homework, if you're trying to think about how these agencies, you know, think about advertising and think about connecting with their user bases, is to go to DietCoke.com in one tab and CokeZero.com in another tab, and try and guess who each of those brands is targeting. What about apps? We've talked a lot, like Kenneth has been talking, about how users are diverse and how all these different business models can play together. We know people like apps, but really, people really, really like free apps. 68% of the apps in the Android Play Store are free, and many of those are supported by advertising. So advertising is, you know, an ongoing revenue stream, and it can be done at any scale. Whether it's a small app that's just growing, and no matter how big it is, the advertising can grow with you. There's nothing that advertisers love more than a place where they can reach millions of customers that all maybe want the same thing. So how do we bring this together? This is where you guys come in. App developers and mobile applications can become that newspaper publisher that connect businesses to their potential new customers. And we can help you do that by connecting you through advertisers with AdMob. As I said, advertising is something that you can, you know, scale with your app. On the other side, this is just worth mentioning as a side note, you can actually also become an advertiser yourself, and using the AdMob and Ad Network, you can promote your app to over users on over 300,000 of the apps on our network. You can even also use Google Search to promote your app now, too. This talks more to the point about distribution we were talking about earlier, but you can actually get distribution through advertising, which can be really, really powerful as well. One thing that I think is really neat that we announced a few weeks ago is that the AdMob ad network is now connected to Google's AdWords advertising platform. If anybody's ever bought ads on Google, you would have used AdWords. And AdWords is used by literally millions of advertisers around the world to find customers. And we do that on Google Search. We do that on AdSense today, on the web, which you've probably all seen. And now it's actually possible on AdMob as well. So we are just starting to see these advertisers, you know, while their Don Draper creative directors help them, move into mobile and move into apps. And we're really excited to start seeing a much wider diversity of advertisers going in the future now that we have this connection to AdWords. A lot of the advertising up until this point on mobile has been, you know, for other apps or sort of mobile-focused things, and we're trying to grow that pie into any type of advertiser, which is really exciting. So how can you build a business with your app? Once you've installed the Google AdMob SDK, it's pretty simple. You can choose where you want to put your ads, and then we display ads in the app, and then if users click on the ads and like them, our advertisers pay us, and then we give the lion's share of that back to you guys, and you get paid every time a user clicks on the app. This is pretty basic. How does that actually work, though? This is just some terminology to quickly go through here. When you serve an ad in your app, we call that an impression. So let's say you have a bunch of users and you serve 100,000 impressions. That means that hopefully some of those users will find value from those ads and click on them. So that creates a click-through rate. Let's say 1.5% of those impressions get clicked on. That means that you actually end up targeting advertisers when a user clicks on their ad. And so we then figure out what the price should be through an auction. We sort of set a market price on that click. And then let's say your cost per click is 10 cents or something. What that means is you may just made $1,500 from those 100,000 impressions. And then the other word in the business that we use is RPM, which is simply revenue per 1,000 impressions. So the RPM in this example would be $1.50. So how do you implement these ads? It's actually pretty simple. This is the onCreate method of a fake Android app we have in our sample library on code.google. And basically all we're doing here is, you know, making sure we're in our main content view. We're creating a new ad view object, which has in it the ad unit ID that you can get once you sign up on AdMob. And then we basically add the ad view to our layout and then create an ad request at the end of this method here. And so as you can see that, we have an ad of type banner, which is a sort of basic type. And the A12345 is your site ID that you signed up for online. One thing that we announced back in April that we think is pretty cool is this thing called Smart Banners. One thing that you guys may have noticed is that there's lots of different Android devices out there today, and they have different screen sizes, right? It can be tricky to make sure your app actually renders for all these different screen sizes, and then ads on top of that, you know, it gets kind of annoying, I think, sometimes. Three devices you're all getting for free at 4 p.m., I think they all have different screen sizes. So Smart Banners is actually a simple but kind of clever optimization that we do on your behalf. If you implement Smart Banners, you don't actually have to worry about the width of the screen that you're going to show the ad on. We will actually grow the ad and shrink the ad in the horizontal dimension to make sure that it fits, and so you don't end up with those sort of ugly black bars, and it can fit big or small, portrait or landscape. It's pretty neat. So let's talk about what we should think about when implementing your ads, and this kind of all gets back to figuring out your user engagement patterns and figuring out what the right place is to actually do this sort of thing is. It's going to be different for every app. So number one, we think it's important to really build your app with ads in mind, right? It's not really good if you don't set expectations off the bat that there are going to be ads in your app. And if you add them in later, your users might not be very happy about that, right? Two is, if you have search, that's pretty cool. We'll talk about this in a minute, but we have a special way of showing ads if your users are actually searching for something or issuing some sort of query, so we can target the ads much better. So that's pretty cool. And then you have to pay attention to your user engagement. If you know what your users are doing, you shouldn't screw them up through an ad, because that's not good for anyone, right? Interrupting in the middle of a level of a game might not make sense. Maybe it makes sense at the end of the level when the user might be thinking about doing something else and isn't going to be quite as interrupted by that ad. And that sort of gets to point number four, is that really try and avoid accidental clicks. It's sometimes easy. There's not a lot of real estate on these phones. Don't put ads near controls and things, right? The screen is small, and if that generates accidental clicks, it's a bad user experience. People are going to go, I don't like that. I didn't mean to click on this ad. We need to make sure user engagement comes first, right? And these accidental clicks also reduce value for advertisers. And over time, that means you won't make as much money, right? The advertisers are going to react, and our system will react. So price those lower value clicks lower. So let's talk about a few examples. First is a Korean app called SimSimi. This is an AI robot from a developer in Korea. So you can send a message to SimSimi, and it'll send you a message back. And so this was really popular in Korea when they first launched. But SimSimi thought they wanted to try and expand out globally. They realized it would be difficult to acquire paid users in lots of different countries because there were some, craziness with billing and such like that. So they tried to do a free approach in some of these new markets using advertising. And so these ad revenues allowed them to scale up quickly around the world. Downloads soared to about 15 million, and now 80% of their downloads are actually from these markets outside of Asia. This is a great example of how you can build a real global business using a combination of advertising and other methods. We have a nice quote from their CEO about how they expanded globally, and their advertising revenues actually ended up exceeding their paid app revenues in this case. Another example is something I alluded to a minute ago about search ads. This is something that I think Google does uniquely well. If you have an app that actually users are interacting with in a search sort of way, we can show you highly targeted search ads that are even more useful and even higher value than the sort of more generic display ads that are sort of the norm. And so Around Me is this app which lets users search for things around them, restaurants, bars, sort of local search. And they implemented search ads, which you can see at the top there. It's a local bank ad, I guess. And by doing this, they were able to actually earn 3 times higher RPMs than they were for regular display ads and 5 times higher click-through rates using these search ads. They're called custom search ads for mobile apps, and that's something you can learn more about at the developer sandbox tomorrow. So cool. So let's just talk for a few minutes. We only have a few minutes left about other ad networks. We know AdMob isn't the only ad network. Maybe you tried one ad network to start out with, but things are fluctuating. It's a dynamic market, and no ad network is created equal. These RPMs fluctuate, and eCPMs fluctuate depending on all sorts of factors: seasonality, demand, and some ad networks have different strengths. For instance, some are very strong in emerging markets, where others might not be. So it varies per country too. And so soon enough, you have 3 or 4 different ad network SDKs in your app, and they're all fluctuating. So what do you do? you end up mediating. By installing a mediation layer, you can actually hopefully ride that curve and figure out what your optimal ECPM is from combining all of those networks. So mediation sort of acts like a railroad switch. There's a sort of a wrapper SDK which then controls which SDKs it requests ads from. We launched an AdMob mediation product in April, which is a free and open feature, part of the AdMob product, which lets you use almost any ad network. And it's also built on Google infrastructure, and lets you choose basically how to organize those ad networks, whether it's by sort of a percentage basis of traffic or which of them has the sort of highest ECPMs at the moment. It also has a sort of a nice dashboard. This is just a picture of the dashboard, which as you can see there, you're picking which ad networks you want to enable, which order they're in, and what their sort of expected payouts are going to be. And one of the great things about our AdMob mediation product is that it's super simple to integrate. This is the same code we looked at a minute ago about how to set up an ad view. And so to set up a mediation ad view, all you need to do is go and sign up for mediation on our website, and you get a new mediation ID, which you simply replace your regular ad unit ID with the mediation ID. You're done. So this is really neat. You can then simply, compile in those additional ad networks SDKs, and we do all the plumbing for you. It's actually pretty sweet. So that's a nice, mediation is a nice way to, optimize your ads once you've figured out where they should go and how they should best interact with your users. There's a lot to think about here, right? We want to help you guys make money. We want to partner with you because, something that we like to do at Google is partner with app developers, obviously. and there's a lot of different products here. We think that we have a pretty flexible and comprehensive advertising platform as well as a direct monetization platform with Google Play. And hopefully those are, between the two, how you can make the most money from your app on Android and really build a business out of that. As we said at the beginning, the most important thing here is to understand how to engage where and when and how to change types of
data.
Critically about that, that's really the only way to ensure sort of long-term value from your users and then consequently from your business. So I highly encourage you guys to stick around for the promotion talk now and go to the analytics talk on Friday as well, because I think there's a lot more to learn about actually how to sort of manage these parts of your business. So thank you very much. Thanks again to Kenneth, and I think we're actually about out of time. So enjoy the rest of the day.